What up, couch potatoes? You're listening to Couch Potato Salad, the finest nonsense analysis about pop culture served up fresh for your ears. I'm your host, Jacob Mattingly, and today we're talking about 12 Forever, something endless dream. 12 Forever, Matt Berry's in this, so go watch it. Yeah, when I do any TV show, I will be singing the theme song. At least the first time, like if I'm doing multiple seasons, which I plan to for certain shows that ended on a clusterfuck of an ending. No, not How I Met Your Mother. Ones that... It's Star vs. the Forces of Evil. I can't even conceal it. I still love the show, but I also hate the ending and the lead up to a good chunk of the... It's complicated, and that's for another video. Now I've successfully killed my momentum. 12 Forever. Created by Julia Vickerman, 12 Forever started as a pilot for Cartoon Network, which really shockingly pick it up. Like, I know they don't pick up every pilot, but like damn near every pilot that's been made by them has been picked up. Like, Infinity Train only took as long as it did, and is only a miniseries, because in order, the creator, or Owen Dennis, was busy working on Close Enough, which I still don't know what the fuck happened there. And then because Owen Dennis always planned it as a miniseries. Victor and Valentino, Apple and Onion, most shows that have gotten a pilot on Cartoon Network in recent years, with one or two exceptions, have gotten the green light. So this was a real baffling decision, especially since, like, it's colorful, it deals with mature issues, the LGBT content, which we'll get to once I get into the show proper, really fits the network's acceptance up. Like, there's just... I really don't get why this was rejected, but Netflix decided to pick it up, and a few years later, and as I found out, post-release, mind you, even though it was complete, it was pushed back 3 months. Netflix finally released it earlier last week, and I figured I better cover it now, because there's a lot coming. I mean, a lot. Like, Infinity Train premiered this week, so I'm probably gonna be reviewing that soon. I've got Rocko's Modern Life, Static Cling, and when I get the chance, I'm gonna be seeing Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I got a lot of stuff I can use for the podcast, as well as a lot of stuff to watch and to fit in my brain. I'm also watching Final Space Season 2 as it airs. There's just a lot going on, not to mention all the shit going on in my life. So, yeah, it's been a chaotic time, and with a lot of stuff in the pipeline, I would rather not miss out on the talking about this awesome show or on how shitty Netflix has been to shows. If you hadn't heard, Tuca and Birdie from Lisa Hanawalt, one of the character designer on BoJack Horseman, was canceled about a week ago, give or take. It was also canceled alongside Designated Survivor, which, while I don't really care about that show, I do feel it's worth mentioning given Netflix gave the show an extra season after it was canceled. And while Lucifer got similar treatment, while it got two more seasons, it's ending on season 5. Though it's getting a bigger season, so the creators while it's vague if the creators really wanted to end next season or not, at the very least, that show's going out on a high. And not on a show I watch, and not one that, as far as I can tell, I haven't read far enough into Sandman to get into more of Satan than his one appearance early on. How accurate it is, also, but I do know a lot of people love the show, so it's still just, yeah. But yeah, back on Tuca and Birdie, it was, like, it's one of the best shows of the year. I'll be doing a list of best animated shows of the year at the end of, well, the year. Duh. But, and 12 Forever is a definite contender for that, by the way. Like, but it's also going to be a tight year, but I'm hoping it's probably going to make it, but it's still, like, a really tight year, what with two, and given that I looked at Voltron's schedule, which I know, not the same exact team, but given She-Ra kind of took DreamWorks, its place as DreamWorks, like, big action show that's not, like, backed by Guillermo del Toro, it's probably going to get, it's probably going to have a winter season, I'm sure. But, yeah. Like, Tuca and Birdie had rave reviews. Like, there were one or two reviews that were reluctant, but for the most part, the reception was overwhelmingly positive. The humor was on point. The drama was well done. It's a nice sister show to BoJack while being fully its own thing. Like, themes of struggle and, like, a tendency to get really depressing towards the end of the season and have, like, one episode be super intense that changes everything. Yeah, that's, like, she picked that up from BoJack, or it may have been her idea for all we know, or it could have been part of the group effort. But yeah, it was really good, and I will definitely review it at some point when I don't have 40 other things to talk about on the top of my mind. But yeah, the reason I talk about it is I am deathly afraid for 12 Forever's future. Like, in a month, if you hear me talking in a, say, a review of Pauly Shore's Adopted, which I own because it's just, it's something off the cover, partly because I can't stand Pauly Shore. I watched Biodome, or at least part of it. That was a mistake. And it's a film that was literally written on the plane. I'm not fucking with you. It was on Wikipedia. I'll get to it some other day. I'm already getting off topic enough as is. My point is, I'm worried for the show. Like, not Cartoon Network. I wouldn't be surprised if they dropped the show with a little fanfare, but really, they do give their new shows decent fanfare. Like, they'll eventually stop promoting a show if they want nothing to do with it, but credit where it's due, they actually give, well, Netflix barely really promoted 12 Forever before it came out, and it's mostly been fan response. Me, I just really wanted to see it. Once I found out it was finally on Netflix, I jumped right on that train and watched it over 2 days with my surrogate nephew. And then introduced it to my nieces because I love it. And I will get more into why it's awesome. But yeah, I'm worried about it, and it is, like, I did feel it was a good time to talk about how Netflix kind of needs it. Like, again, like, they don't have a ton of big originals on the, like, the kids' animated side of their own that aren't, like, what I mean by that is that aren't, like, sublet, like, by DreamWorks. About half their animated content is DreamWorks-related. And even some of their biggest ones on that, like the Tales of Arcadia trilogy, which may not be, like, the biggest flash, but does seem fairly popular. That's produced through DreamWorks. She-Ra, DreamWorks, Voltron before that. Like, granted, I heard that show's fan base exploded. The show exploded, but result one day. But either way, Voltron was still a hit for them for a while. And that was also DreamWorks. Dragon Prince, Hilda, and now 12 Forever, some of the few shows that are actually not through, like, the big DreamWorks machine. Oh, and by the way, I watched a bit of Adventures of Captain Underpants, so even, like, the ones based on movies, which, granted, before anyone comes I was a huge fan of the books as a kid. I absolutely love them. I'm glad my niece absolutely loves them. And I like the series entirely because it captures the spirit of the books really fucking well. And I've been procrastinating watching the movie, but I've heard nothing but good things. However, I also doubt DreamWorks would have made a movie out of, or made a series out of it without the movie, and does take some elements from the movie, like most of the kid characters, while made into their own thing in the series, were apparently taken from background characters in the movie. So, it's technically a movie adaptation, but it's really not, if that makes any sense. Simply because there's another source material involved. But I digress. My point is, never trust Nixon. My actual point is, they should really have made a big push for this show. They have a decent animation department, so they don't really need to worry, but, and especially with the huge amount of bad press, like, and the Tuca and Birdie announcement was also botched by the fact that they renewed Big Mouth for 3 goddamn seasons, which, for the record, Big Mouth is okay in my eyes. Go ahead, bring your torches and pitchforks. I think it's all right. But it is a severely flawed show, which I will also have to bring up in this review because there's some similarities, but we'll get to that. I'm almost done ranting about Netflix. Don't worry, but yeah, like, it's bullshit. Like, part of what pisses me off is, like, F's for Family had to wait forever. Until, like, the last 2 seasons BoJack didn't, but before that, we had to wait forever. If Mystery Science Theater 3000, kind of a pass, simply because I think the crew was trying to figure out what to do with it, and also to get the money, raise the money for it. So, like, with Mystery Science Theater 3000, it's a bit more understandable, but still, they just take for fucking ever to announce, at least announce for some shows that they're renewed. And yet, with Big Mouth, they make a big deal out of making a deal with the creators of it. Which I assume one of those is Nick Kroll, who is fairly talented, but... which I get, because it's like a huge hit for them, and it, even the controversy generates tons of views for their bullshit algorithm. But it's like, you cancel a show that's clearly worth a second season, and clearly worth more on your investment, for no discernible reason that I can think of. And I hope gets picked up somewhere else, but I'm doubtful, especially with what happened to the Tick over at Amazon. And One Day at a Time barely getting picked up, which is also another bullshit cancel. Like, I'm just getting tired of this shit from Netflix, where they'll just cancel stuff because they don't really want to be involved with it anymore, it costs them too much, rather than because they actually, you know, are listening to what people actually want to watch or care about. It's crap, and that's why I want more people to watch the show while I'm doing this episode. So fans can spread this around. And is it for my own exposure? No. Like, that's nice and all, but I just want to talk about this show and convince more people to watch it. So now I've spent about 15 minutes of your time, more like 14, about another 10 seconds. 3, 4, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, now I've spent like 14 minutes rambling on Netflix. It's time to get the meat and potatoes here. 12 and Forever is about Reggie. Reggie just turned 12 at the start of the series and is kind of nervous about it. Part of it is that her mom, while not a bad person, doesn't really get her and basically gave her a bunch of clothes and a bra for her birthday. Which, by the way, who the fuck gives their child their training bra at a birthday celebration? Like, even, like, going for the awkwardness or stuff, or even if this was a full-on bra, it's just like, who does that? Like, in front of her brother and her best friend, Todd, who's also a major character and we'll get to in a second, but, like, and her
weird friend of the family, surrogate sister to her mom. Like, my mom has friends like that. Trudy, I think, is the character's name. Love her. But, like, in front of, like, all those people, like, it's not a big packed party, but it's still like, what the fuck were you thinking? Like, even with you, like, and her mom admits that she was being excited, like, this is something I just didn't think about before, but now it's just gonna claw at me. Like, who thinks giving a brawl, like, or in front of, like, an obnoxious teenage boy who is also your son? God. Just stupid parenting. And I know it's a fictional character and she's meant to be flawed, but this kind of stretches plausibility to be this stupid. Anyways. So yeah, Reggie's not excited about growing up. Puberty, first crushes, his responsibility, all that shit scares her. Not helped by the fact that, again, her mom is a struggling single mother who at one point is clearly shown struggling to balance their checkbooks and whose brother is kind of a douche nozzle. Nozzle who's standoffish and mocks her for being immature. To get away from it all, quite literally, and to run away from her problems, sometimes quite literally, like, minus the running part, but blooping away doesn't, your problems isn't a thing yet. 12 uses a magical key, which activated for her one day. There is, like, one neat thing about this show is that it doesn't, like, have, like, it starts, like, in media res, so to speak, where, while it begins at a natural starting point for the series, we don't know, like, how Reggie got her key to what I'm about to talk about, or any of that. And, like, a later episode, which, while having an interesting wraparound plot, is also a two-parter entirely, so we can talk so just how she got to the Endless and how a lot of other stuff came to be. Now, what's the Endless? The Endless, or Endless Island, is basically a large Technicolor island, like, just full of beautiful, like, stuff. There's a party and there's a bunch of colorful citizens, including Tasty Troy, who constantly asks people, "You want to play Foursquare?" Which, as we learn later in the series, is a giant arena-sized sport on Endless to Yu-Gi-Oh! Levels of ridiculousness. So, of course, I love it. As well as the fact that, but yeah, there's a doctor who looks kind of like a bee, but could have been human. More on that in a bit. A trio of adorable things. And in the first episode, 12 berries are a box of her stuff her mom wanted to put in a garage sale, thus bringing to life more residents. Brown Roger, a brown hair thing that she's had since she was a kid. Mac and Beefhouse, a gay couple that are also super buff warriors and slash wrestlers, who I just fucking adorable. Two bags of marbles, or rather a bag of marbles and another bag of marbles, who I wish had more screen time. Like, that was a fucking great gag. And I forgot its name, but like a weird jelly, or not jelly, like a weird blob thing with tentacles that's adorable that spits out weapons. And that was exactly what she designed it to do. Along for the ride on Endless are two other kids and Reggie's only other real friends. Todd, who she's been friends with for a few months and soon after meeting him took to the Endless, again, covered in the Origins episode, especially since it's part of the plot there. Cleverly done stuff. You know, when Reggie arrives on the, okay, But Todd, a wannabe musician who's the opposite of Reggie. Well, Reggie's kind of wild, the tomboy, likes to punch things, likes to duck her responsibilities. Well, Todd does go to the Endless to get a break from his responsibilities. He has to be responsible at his home. Like, early in the series, his brother leaves for college, and it's revealed that his dad's an irresponsible dipweasel who constantly leaves his kids alone with his two, which his two daughters are very young. And basically, it's up to Todd to step in as the parent figure. So he gets to an escape by going to the Endless, where he can just, you know, be a fucking teenager instead of having to be a fucking dad to his kids, because his dad's a fucking dipweasel. Like, it's both. That's also part of why I give Esther's mom credit. She's written as a three-dimensional character, as are they all. So she's trying to be a good parent. She just doesn't relate to their kid. Something I relate to. Sometimes I've had that problem with my mom, though for the most part we're good. It's just sometimes we're definitely not the same person. Same with me and my dad. But again, more on that later. But yeah. And Todd, Aaron, since I have to let it at least note it, Todd replaces a character named Shane from the pilot, who is basically the same person, only white. As Todd is coded as Latino, given he has a Latino voice actor, or a brown skin tone. And, well, actually, that's all I have to go on that, but why not? But at any rate, it's just, yeah, like, I know some of it's racism. I get, like, people liking Shane's character design minus the horrifyingly long arms for his body, which I have because I'm fat. I'm fat. You know it. But they're basically the same character as Shane and Ernest being part into our second lead, Esther, who's introduced in the third episode. Esther, who came to Endless on her own and just happens to run into the gang, and Reggie, who part of her character is she can be a bit selfish, especially when it comes to Endless, as she views it as hers. And it's her place, even though it becomes increasingly obvious the series goes on that not only has it been around long since there, but just Esther being able to reach there on her own alone proves that no, it doesn't belong to her, even if it's shaped slightly by her mental state. But yeah, that being said, Esther is more responsible, studious, and also relishes in the time spent simply because her parents are barely home, so she has plenty of time to go there, as well as a lot of expectations placed on them to be a good student and whatnot. Hence why she's so smart. She also really loves fantasy literature and is just adorable. But yeah, Endless is a place to get away from it all, but it also has weird properties. All three of the kids each get a special power just from coming there. Esther gains an outfit, which, as revealed in the flashback, like I said, was something she wore in real life that no one just really liked and thought of her as a weirdo for wearing, and super strength, as well as, again, a weapon spitting little octopus blob. Todd, as with Shane before him, has shape-shifting powers, and unlike Shane, well, I can't remember or not, honestly, it's been a while since, has purple skin for some reason, probably because it looks neat. And Esther, once she realizes it, has a neat jumpsuit from the beginning, and then once she realizes it, has a cool floating Saturn-like platform or made of light and a light lasso. So the three have adventures, protect Endless, and generally just have a good time while trying to escape their problems, whether they succeed or not. Oh, and again, I also brought up the properties, but I almost forgot that basically anything you bury on the Endless, as they discover in the first episode, comes to life. Because Esther buries all her old toys, they come to life, and you can make life. However, it's also dependent on your emotional state, with Todd's desperation to replace his brother in an early episode, creating a snuck-up guitarist, and then his anger over said guitarist creates a sort of abomination man. But, of course, as I said, they have to defend it, and while some of the threats are just things created from their own stupidity, dear angst. The main instigator for issues on the Endless is the Butt Witch, played by Matt Berry. So yes, it's a and yes, the Butt Witch is a woman with a man's voice. It's fucking great. If you don't know who Matt Berry is a fucking talented actor from Britain, and with one of his big breakthroughs, as far as I can tell, being on the Mighty Boosh in the first two seasons of Dixon Brainbridge. He was also one of the standouts on the IT Crowd, which I haven't watched a lot of, but whatever I've seen of it, clips I've seen of him with it, especially the one where he crashes a funeral, seriously, Google that. It's just him running in at full ham, screaming, "Father!" Trust me, you won't regret it. Once you're done here, of course. But, yeah. Matt Berry is a full fucking tilt ham and voiced the Butt Witch in the pilot, which is why, and I'm surprised, since he also originated a role in Harvey Beaks, but had to back out. And his only other roles have been one-offs, like his recent role on Archer, which, if you have, like, a cable provider and can watch Mr. Deadly Goes to Town from Archer 1999, do. I was able to watch it because I've been going to a place that has cable part-time, and he's fucking it. I love him, and his original series, Snuffbox, which also has fellow voice actor Rich Fulcher in it, and is really fucking good, and his three-season series, Toast of London, which is also on Netflix, and I finally got to watch because Netflix went worldwide with it, is really fucking hilarious. The Butt Witch recognizes Endless used to be different, doesn't like what Reggie's done with it, and wants to reverse it. And she with the help of Big Deal, resident Endless, who's hopelessly in love with her but has no real shot and doesn't really do a lot of value. And she may find her opportunity, because an interesting thing that occurs as it goes on is whenever the kids fight on the Endless, and not like fighting the Butt Witch or hitting things with like a hockey stick, which is Reggie's weapon of choice, or a bazooka or a flamethrower, she can pretty much get whatever weapon she wants. It's great. When the kids like get into an argument or whatnot, worms come out of them that the Butt Witch eats to get stronger, and that's basically the myth arc, as the friends' tensions slowly boil. Esther's refusal to grow up, Todd getting understandably mad when she makes him watch Brown Roger for her when he's basically forced into babysitting half the time. Esther, like, that's just it. The tension, there's tension there, and I like that it's not instantly solved. At one point, Todd's kind of an asshole and says nothing they do on the Endless matters, even though it means a lot to Reggie, and even if yeah, it's a weird world where not everything's got matter in real life, the citizens are still living people. But it's also understandable, because he just has a lot. But yeah, the series is mostly about that, and about the developing struggles with them, as well as their struggles. Like, when Esther gets her first crush, or not Esther, sorry. When Reggie gets her first crush, which, by the way, is on a girl. Reggie is heavily implied, if not just basically all outright stated, to be gay. I mean, maybe bisexual, but she's sexual, and as a bisexual myself, I don't say it slightly, but I'm pretty sure she's meant to be, like, 100% gay. I mean, there's not really a percentage, but, like, just gay, and not, like, I like both, or I like people based on this, or that. No, like, she just likes women. That was awkward, but my point still stands. Connelly, played by the always amazing Stephanie Beatrice of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, in a small role, but hopefully if we get more seasons, which I'm doubting, but I'm just really hope-pulling for, is basically an 8th grade girl she gets a crush on, and that's what leads to the flashback episode. She breaks her key due to it, and after she gets it fixed, she tends to use it to run away from her because she just doesn't know how to deal with it. And that's an interesting reaction. That's not resolved by the end of the season. Like, that's stuff I like. That problems like Todd's dad, or Esther's overachieving, or Reggie's struggles with her mom sometime, aren't just easily fixed with one episode. So, while it's kind of in the standard for shows anyway, it's still nice. Like, it's a conscious effort here, and it takes a lot at the end of the entire situation to get them to overcome their stuff, and even then the issues, like, Reggie starts to get resentful because Todd starts dating someone towards the end of the series and then wants to bring her to Endless. And Reggie is not happy about that because she's kind of immature and doesn't like the idea of romance because her parents are divorced. When we get a whole episode on that, which also guest stars Amy Sedaris, who's a fucking great voice actress, as anyone who watches BoJack Horseman will tell you. But yeah, like, she finds the backs of her dad's stuff, and it makes her really upset, and she's in denial over it, and there's a really damn good scene where she talks to her mom about it and wonders just why her dad left. That's something I like about the show. It deals with, like, it'll deal with stuff like, there's actually a really good episode where, like, the kids are all frustrated for various reasons with their teachers. And it's a good Aesop about how teaching's not only difficult, but that it shows why they're teaching this way. Which, granted, teachers aren't bad, is a common Aesop in kids' shows, I'm not gonna lie. But it's kind of one that needs to be taught simply because the teachers can feel like the enemy. There are some teachers that are dicks. I had a teacher in third grade who was just an absolute bitch. And I'm not saying that because, oh, every woman who's bad bitch. No. She was genuinely a bitch who treated me like garbage because I had autism and couldn't, and had trouble doing cursive because of my autism, to the point I can barely do my signature in cursive, mind you. And my dysgraphia makes it difficult to write. And was generally a terrible person. I'm glad retired, so no children ever has to deal with that asshole again. But most teachers are just hardworking people trying to earn a meager paycheck because they want to help children. And this episode shows that. And does it well. There's a lot of good humor, too. Like, the comedy's really, really on point. I can't remember all of it, especially because it's been about a week since I watched it, but there's just a lot of funny shit in it, and I don't really feel like spoiling it. Well, I mean, one bit I can remember, at least from the first episode, is like the three there's a trio of adorable characters, like, want to sing 12 a birthday song, and just, like, sing It's the Birthday Song over and over, which, given I've been around five-year-olds quite a bit, as I have a niece, two of them, in fact, and one's 8, and I also have a surrogate nephew who's around that age. Yeah, it sounds like something a small child would do, and it's funnily awkward, as is, like, Todd's horror when Esther says, I don't know, give it a couple minutes. Or not Esther, Reggie. And I know the character's different, I'm just my brain's a bit fried, so bear with me, but yeah. Like, and again, Reggie's a good character. Like, the characters around it. Todd can be a bit up his ass about maturity. Like, not to, like, Bernard from Craig of the Creek levels, but I mean, like, sometimes he just doesn't seem sensitive to how hard it is for Reggie, but Reggie can also be really fucking stubborn with this stuff. And again, it deals with a lot of different issues. One episode has them go to the mall and Reggie gets jealous because Esther and her mom gel better, because Esther, despite being a studious, is more traditionally girly and thus bonds with her mom better. Something I can relate to, as my best friend Corey sometimes has a lot easier talk with my mom. I mean, I love movies myself, but they love them on a level it's just not the same, and it takes time and maturity to get used to a thing like that. Like, even as a grown-ass man, I sometimes felt a little bad about it, because I have anxiety and shit. There's just a lot of good shit and stuff. Like, the side characters are funny, and there's a lot of good world building. I won't spoil too much about the Endless, like I spoiled the Worms thing, but as it's revealed, there's a more sinister side to it. The fact that it's always sunshining actually makes it hard to keep track of time, which is a problem at times. Like, they just really thought the series well out, and the characters are well thought out. And there's a good, really funny moment when Kathy, her mom's friend, at least I got her name right, gives Reggie a knife for her, like, in a flashback, gives, like, a 6 or 7-year-old Reggie a knife for her birthday. It's... Like, again, I can't think of much of the humor specifically, but it was because I did binge watch it. But it's an excellent cast, the animation's nice and vibrant. And again, the big sell is that it has a lot of complexity to it without feeling too dour, because again, the setting of Endless makes for a lot of quick comedy. And like, for every episode, just to give you a better idea of the balance, for every episode that, like, takes place in the real world or has the real world impact, there's also ones that are just, like, about the Endless. Like, there's an episode where the main trio goes through the, you know, it's funny on its own, improbable series of events that goes through the Endless into everyone's homes and listens in on them. And the funny moral of the episode, where they decide not because it's wrong to stop spying on the other residents, but because the one creepy guy in town also does it and they don't want to be like him. Just lots of great jokes and stuff like that. It's like, I can't say it enough. It's really good, and I really just recommend watching it. Easy A for me. Probably an A. I'll bump it up to an A+. Why not? But yeah, I'm really hoping, even though it's unlikely, and only because Netflix are dicks, not because of the quality, that this show gets picked up for another season. And if it doesn't, I'm hoping Turner gives it a second shot and picks it up for Cartoon Network. Like, it's funny, and, like, I guess one thing I should get to before we go is that, like, why I brought up Big Mouth. And that's because the show, like Big Mouth, kind of tackles being, like, 12 or 13, hitting puberty, just in a less gross way. And while there are, like, there's not a lack of female perspective on Big Mouth, far from it, but this is just more, since we're dealing with, it also just feels more like from a kid's eye view. Like, whereas Big Mouth's, like,
basically we're teenagers already. Like, some characters like Missy are a bit immature, but most of them have already, like, transitioned fully. This is more where, like, Todd and Esther are kind of in the middle, where they have some childish love, and then 12, Reggie's entirely on the other end. Like, that's interesting, and that's a bit more interesting to me. Plus, again, the world building's a far more consistent than with Big Mouth, which, again, it's okay, but 12 Forever's a step above, and it shows what a difference having a consistent world and having a consistent, like, thing you build on versus having the fucking ghost of Duke Ellington and not and only, like, three hormone monsters. Not that Big Mouth's all bad, but, again, yeah, the world building is its weakest part, while it's one of the strongest. Like, and, like, don't get me wrong, Endless is, like, not in that in depth, but how it works and whatnot is fairly consistent and helps build the arcs. And I hope to see more of the show as it goes. That should do it for this week. As I said, there's a bunch of other stuff I'm covering. I'm not sure what will be coming first. We'll see, and we'll see when I have time. But I hope to see you soon. Have a good day, good morning, or good evening, whatever you're having. Make it a good one, and I will see you next time, hopefully.